This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Now, yesterday, we would have touched very briefly on what could be happening with the Japanese yen. We saw the value of that currency tumble quite a bit. It reminded many of what happened in the 1990s there with the Japanese economy and that currency. It was trading at around 160 yen to one US dollars. Now, we have actually seen this currency declining over a period of time due to various factors. So we decided to ask Einar Tangen, who's senior fellow and economic affairs commentator at the Tehi Institute in Beijing, to help us unpack exactly why the state of the Japanese economy is as it is, but most importantly, what that currency depreciating so sharply means for the Japan as a really strong, actually, economy there for a long time. It enjoyed the number three spot in the world, the world's third largest economy. But that's been overtaken by Germany based on some of the issues that are happening there. Einar, always a pleasure. Good evening to you. Hi, Einar, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Brilliant. Thank you so much for your time. A good evening to you, Einar. Let's get right into it. Maybe starting off by looking at the Japanese yen and the slow and steady decline we have seen over the last few years. Einar, what has that been a consequence of?
Well, I mean, the Japanese yen has lost a third of its value since 2021. So the recent stuff is kind of par for the course, but there are a number of things that are going on, and you have to split the speculation, market players who are in there because they see a lot of volatility, they see a downward trend, they try to gamble based on it. So you have a lot of people selling the yen, and that leads to it going down, and that further fuels these people. So it's a kind of more selling. So it's kind of going down. Plus, American bond rates are quite high. Japanese rates are basically zero. The U.S. is paying over 5%. Therefore, it makes more sense to put your money into U.S. bonds rather than Japanese bonds. So it's very difficult. On the real side, you have, the effect of this is that, a country that is so dependent on energy and food and also other resources, intermediate goods from other countries, is now going to have to pay more. So that is not good. It's good for tourism. February was a record year, 2.97 million tourists just in February alone. It's because the yen drops. It's a lot cheaper there. But long term, these effects go away because, everything you buy, all the things that Japanese companies and people buy from outside, that's going to have to be reflected in their wages eventually.
I must ask you, Einar, how it happened that the Japanese economy would be so dependent on imports.
Well, it's the nature of the country. I mean, they do not grow enough food, feed the population. They do have a lot of seafood that kind of ruined by the Fukushima situation. But really, a lot of the problems that Japan has date back to 1986 when they signed the Plaza Accords. This is at the insistence or pressure of Washington. They did not like Japan's rise. I don't, I'm old enough to remember seeing senators and congressmen bashing Toyota cars and Honda cars and taking sledgehammers to Hitachi boomboxes and things like this. Basically, it was many of the same things that they're saying about China today. They didn't trust the government. Subsidized manufacturing was taking American jobs and, distorting the economy, and that the Japanese just weren't like us. So the reaction was the Plaza Accords. And ever since that time, Japan has gone sideways. In fact, today, Japan's economy is worth less in real dollar terms than it was in 1986, to give you a kind of idea.
Sure, that is a very sobering and I think an important lesson for many just to remember. And that wasn't too long ago either, was it, Aina? It was long ago, but not too long ago. I must also ask you here about then looking at the government's interventions. We have heard rumours, I guess, at this point that the government has tried to intervene with this currency over the last few days. And I'm wondering if that is the case and if it's had the intended outcome.
Well, I mean, this is where you have to separate the real economy from the speculative economy, because the speculators thinking that the Japanese bank is going to intercede are basically buying yuan. So, and as a result, that pushes the price up. So put that aside. In real terms, the Japanese government has, you know, two choices or a mixture of those two choices. One is to try to defend their currency, which means buying, yen and decreasing the amount of liquid yen that's out there, so that it drives up the price. But that can be very expensive, and in the past, it has not always been very effective, especially over the long term. The second part is to raise interest rates, but to raise it from zero to be competitive with the U.S., 5%. Really difficult to see. So it's probable that they'll do a little mixture of each. They'll maybe raise the rates a little bit, and at the same time defend the yen. But right now, it's very precarious. There are a lot of problems politically. This causes a lot of friction. For ordinary people, this is inflation. Their food costs go up. Their energy costs go up. And right now, people aren't feeling very flush. They're really feeling the global downturn. And as a result, this does change governments, especially when it comes to democracy.
What we are seeing here, Aina, and I'm wondering if it's just what we're seeing around the globe, even including the Americas here. The era of cheap money, it has come, it's gone.
Well, that's the problem. Cheap money is kind of like drinking. It's great until you have a hangover the next day. And then all of a sudden you have all this massive debt. The U.S. Have $34 trillion. It's estimated to go up another couple of trillion this year. We have no plan to pay it back. We're, in essence, borrowing money to pay the interest on money that we borrowed. And depending on what happens with the presidential election, you could see more stimulus going into the economy, which would obviously mean if it's Donald Trump, he's not going to raise taxes. He's probably just going to say, hey, let's throw some money at it. But that will, of course, come from debt. So there's no end in sight. There's no political will to deal with it. And unfortunately, the Fed likes to believe that raising rates will solve everything, but it hasn't so far. The latest figures have shown we're dramatically below the estimates for growth, and inflation, unfortunately, was way above that. And you're talking about a country right now where 60% of the people aren't happy. They feel that 60% of the country is paying 50% or more either for rent or their mortgage. And they have less money in their pockets than they did, 4 years ago. So generally that means that there's going to be a change.
And I must ask you, Aina, before I let you go here, can we expect that the Japanese economy can, on its own merit, off its own steam, return to being the third largest economy here? Or, is it going to take quite a lot, considering the sell-off that we are seeing of that currency, the inflation that we're seeing there, but also, like you're saying, some of the political issues that might play into what a solution may look like?
Well, you'd always like to believe. The Japanese are great innovators. You remember the 70s and 80s. They really pioneered the automobile industry, changing it worldwide. They're, up until recently, they were always the number one automaker. They also pioneered many other innovations, the Sony Walkman and things like this, boom boxes, all this entertainment stuff. Sony used to be a household word. Games, the electronic games people like to play, those consoles really started in Japan. They have it there, but recently you haven't seen the same kind of innovation. And there's been a lot of manufacturing that's been pushed out to other countries to avoid this trap where, you know, this country say, oh, well, we're not going to buy your cars or your things because they're not made here. They've really made an attempt to globalize, but the local economy has been hollowed out to a certain extent. And, you know, they have these issues about an aging population. It's not so much how much they can spend. It's just that, you know, the economy is kind of stuck, and it's not clear how they can get themselves out of it. They have over 250% of debt to their GDP, the highest in the world, and people wonder how they're going to deal with that. And unfortunately, much of that debt is in U.S. treasuries. And those treasuries, many of them were bought when during the good times when it was easy to get credit and bond rates were very low. So if they try to cash this in, they're going to lose massive amounts of money. And some of that money was borrowed from Japanese banks. So it's not a really good cycle. Hopefully rates come down. They can hold those bonds and then the prices go up as the rates go down. But right now, what we need is more cooperation between China, the U.S., Europe, everybody, to avoid what could be a catastrophic economic situation. You have to work together. I mean, there's something called the prisoner's dilemma, where, you know, when people are stuck in one place, they can either work together and, benefit from that, or they can work against each other, and then everybody suffers. And that's unfortunately where the world is today, whether it's climate change or the economy or conflicts.
Well, Inan, always a pleasure speaking to you there. The prisoner's dilemma, indeed, in fruition here. And I'm also just, excited, I think, to see that possible collaboration. I'm hoping we move towards, some sort of collaboration, even though it's very clear that people are just more polarized, than they ever have been.
Yeah, well, it's that's one of the problems. People are afraid. There's very little trust. It's hard to be a businessman when you're very uncertain about what the future is. When there's geopolitical shifts like that, the U.S. is saying, well, we're not going to let you have this electronic equipment, and we're going to go after your companies, whether it's TikTok or Huawei, et cetera. That's probably not a good way. But I think part of it, I don't want to put all the blame on the U.S., but part of it is this idea in the U.S. that the U.S. has to lead the world, and that whatever happens, whatever is necessary to make that happen is okay, because the U.S. will ensure that World War III doesn't happen. Unfortunately, a lot of U.S. leadership hasn't been in the right direction. People are questioning what's going on in Ukraine, questioning what's going on in Gaza. And they look at Afghanistan and Iraq and so many places that the U.S. has been, which are not better today than they were before the U.S. came in. So I think it's time to for America to reflect and think, is there a better way to do this rather than just insist that we have to be on top and that, making America great is the only thing that's important. I think making the world great would be a better idea.
Absolutely in agreement with you there, Inar. Thank you so much for your time this evening. You've given us a lot to think about.
Thank you.
Brilliant. That was Inar.
Have a good night.
You too. That was Inar Tangen, Senior Fellow and Economic Affairs Commentator at the Tehi Institute in Beijing.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.